This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. The day is finally here. It is draft day. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, broadcasting live from the EFCO Development Studios in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. Look, folks, there are some things that we need to cover today. Pels had a miserable performance last night. Dawson was correct about that fear. I didn't see a lot of it, but I saw enough to know it was bad. And again, it wouldn't be a big deal if they weren't such a bad home team. But they are such a bad home team, and so it is a big deal. We won't talk a lot about that, but because it is draft day, we do need to mention it was bad.
No, it was so easy to play the Thunder. Everybody should have just been wanting to. So you told me that.
Yeah,
so many times.
But I mean, I still rather they still match up better with the Thunder than the Nuggets. I still think you got a better chance of winning that series. Look,
I really don't think so.
You would not, if you played the Nuggets, you would not. You should be 1-1 right now. You threw a game away in game one. There would have been no games to throw away against the Nuggets. I don't believe that. All right. So also last night, something beautiful happened. The Celtics got their face crushed. That's always a good thing. And this little underlying thing about the Heat, it reared its ugly head again last night. Now, it's not going to matter if they don't win one of the next two games in Miami. But if they do win one of the next two games in Miami, then it could matter. I think it's, look, I don't want to overthink this. The Celtics lost. They said they were unbeatable. They got beat double figures at home. So let's just enjoy the moment. Okay, let's not think too much. We'll pick it up later when the draft is over. Cajuns had a bad loss and a survival win in softball yesterday. When we talked to Coach Glasgow, I did not like that schedule at all. They started Sam Ryan, who's hardly pitched this year. They got away with it, and they won. Look, I'm not going to sit there and overanalyze the last midweek game of the year. It's largely irrelevant. It was a game I was worried they could lose, and they almost lost. They needed two strikes with the game-winning runs in scoring position in the last inning to win. They got it. I'm not going to overanalyze it. Sam Ryan's not starting a regional game. I'm not going to even worry about it. You just got to move on. I mean, you just be thankful that you won the game and move on.
They also moved up to 14, though, so that's notable. They passed Missouri in the RPI.
Baseball obviously had an awful loss last night, and it just, again, I'm just so... The whole midweek, I just wish they'd be done with midweek games. Softball finally is done with midweek games. There was so much focus on Coastal, and there's so much focus on Southern Miss over the weekend, and it just shows you what can happen. And the only thing that's not really, 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 really bad about that loss, and look, it was a bad loss. There's no arguing that. But the Cajuns' route to a regional – is not their RPI. The Cajuns' route to a regional is winning the Sun Belt. You have a four-game lead. You just need to not – you just need to win the Sun Belt. And their RPI, you had hopes of it getting better. And if you had won last night, it still had hopes of getting better. But you can't worry about it. You're down to like 57 or something. Can't worry about all that. All you got to do is win the Sun Belt. You'll be a two seed in a regional somewhere, and then you just have to hope you pitch well and play well when you get there. I mean, again, I'm not going to sit there and overthink that, especially on draft day. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Before I get to why I called you in the first place, I think the Saints I think they're going to end up getting that tight end out of Georgia. I think I don't know why. I know they need offensive line help, but I think they're going to end up getting that tight end. In my opinion, what's your take on that?
Well,
I think you want him.
Well, again, I am totally in a. It's the most complex, convoluted. I would love to have him. Like I've said, I think I'm going to cry if they pick him, and I think I'm going to cry if they don't pick him. It's just like I'm a tight end guy. I've been a tight end guy for decades. I think this guy has a chance to be, you know, Kittle, Kelce kind of a guy. I've seen what those impact tight ends can do to football teams. I want it to happen so bad. But again, like the analogy I've been using, the Saints are homeless. They have no foundation. Your offensive line is your foundation. So I certainly will have no problem if they get a tackle. But yeah, I love the concept of the tight end.
Not why I call. No, the Arena Football League. Now, this is not the. Is this the top level of Arena Football League? Because when I saw some of the names like Philadelphia Soul, you know, I'm like, oh, those are some old Arena Football League teams.
It's from that same league. Now, I don't know what. You know, I don't know what word rendition or whatever of that league they're in, where they are, but yeah, it's that league, you know, that Kurt Warner played in.
Okay, and how many?
Now that league is folded and coming. I mean, it's done all kind of things, but I mean, yeah, it's from that league.
And I assume that they chose Blackham because everything kind of happened, you know, so quickly, like with them leaving Lake Charles.
Right.
I assume they're going to play in the Cajun Dome next year?
Well, you know, we don't know if they're going to make it to the end of this year. But and I'm sure they're going to try to get to the Cajun Dome next year. But, none of that, all that stuff hadn't been worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious, man. I will go to at least one game. I wouldn't mind checking it out.
I think a lot of people will check it out. Yes, sir.
You know what's so funny about Arena Football, when I was watching it growing up in the 90s, there was a receiver, not Eddie Brown, not the Eddie Brown who played for the Bengals, but there was another one. Come to find out, that's Antonio Brown's father, man.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, Antonio Brown's father was like was a great AFL receiver, like a Hall of Fame type, you know. Yes, that's crazy, man. I'm surprised no one asked Antonio Brown, like, you know, how was that growing up, you know, with his dad playing Arena Football and all that whole situation. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you for the call. So before we go too much further, what is our poll question of the day?
Yep, it's one you may expect. Final guesses for the NFL draft tonight for the New Orleans Saints. Where will they go in the first round? Will it be offensive line, defensive line, skill position on the offensive side, or other?
And I'm assuming you're saying tight end is a skill position?
Right. That's why I did it like that. Receiver, running back, tight end. You know, obviously we don't expect running back, but we'll throw them all together.
I mean, and what are you thinking?
I mean, it's O-line unless something weird happens, but again, we've got all these. I mean, it's every year. It's not like this is new. But all of a sudden, I mean, they've got the Chargers flying up the draft odds to take a quarterback. You saw that this morning?
I don't believe that at all.
Yeah, but I don't get it either.
But why all this crazy stuff happens? And I'm about to get into that in the next segment. Like, now look, it's not crazy to think that Jim Harbaugh is going to do something unconventional because everything he does is unconventional. And so now, to think that they could trade down, that's not new and that's not crazy. I think it could happen. If I was them, I'd pick a wide receiver. You got special wide receivers. You have this quarterback that everyone raves about and yet it's never won anything. Why not give him a wide receiver to throw to? But no, them trading down, it would not shock me. But to pick a quarterback, like, what sense would that even make? I just think that's silly. Like, if that happens, that's just insanity. I don't see that happen. The other thing that's so, I've heard some things though, in the last day that are crazy. And some of them are things that I hadn't really thought about, and a couple of them make a little sense. I mean, the one that, when I first heard it, I'm like, no. And then you think about it, and you're like, you know what? That wouldn't really be that far-fetched. Now, I don't think it's going to happen. If you're the Miami Dolphins, you have, and you know me, I hate left-handed quarterbacks. But if you're the Miami Dolphins, you have a left-handed quarterback with an injury history and a supposed weaker arm. Michael Penix is a left-handed quarterback with an injury history, and most say he's got the strongest arm in this entire draft of all the quarterbacks. So the knock on Michael Penix is that he's got an injury history, where if you're the Dolphins, you already have a quarterback with an injured history. So what does that matter? At least this cat hasn't been injured the last two seasons. So the thought was, why wouldn't the Dolphins pick Michael Penix if he's still available? Like, they already have an injured left-handed quarterback with a weak arm. Why not get an injured left-handed quarterback with a strong arm?
I mean, that's like, I never thought of it.
And then I heard it, and I'm like, you know, it kind of makes sense to me.
I just, that's like going, we got this great boat, and it runs, it's awesome. We have so much fun on it, but it might have a leak and sink. So let's get another boat that also has leaks that might sink, because then if the first one sinks, we can use the second one that might sink. I don't know if picking another injury-prone player is your solution to having an injury-prone player.
I think it's interesting. I never thought about that until I heard someone say it yesterday. I'm like, you know what? It could work.
Like, that's
he's
kinda
got a stronger arm.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't know if I buy that logic. I'd have to get some real convincing on that one.
The other thing is, why all of a sudden, like early on in the month after the Super Bowl, J.C. Lee, almost, it seemed like the vast majority of predictions had the Saints taking J.C. Latham, the right tackle from Alabama, who's humongous. But he's not humongous fat like the cat Mims is. He's just humongous. He's like 6'6", 350 or whatever. But then he started dropping. Like, I've seen him, you know, a lot of people have him going in the 20s. Then yesterday, out of the blue, I'm watching one of these, you know, the path to the draft with one of these famous, draft expert guys. They got J.C. Latham going 5. Like, what? Like, out of the blue, all of a sudden, J.C. Latham is 5? Potentially, I've seen him 9 and 10. So, like, we've been focusing on this top 3, supposed, and then now Latham, all these people out of the blue are picking him in the top 10. So now I'm like, they're supposedly 4. We've known there were 5, but we didn't think, we thought only 3 of them were like top 10 eligible. This is crazy. All right, let's do this. We'll take a timeout. It is draft day, and we are going to get into historical and now and all of that. Saints draft talk starting next. Stay tuned.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome into Footnotes. All right. It is draft day. We've been waiting for this day for a long time, and it is, I don't like this flurry of crazy things that people are saying, or like, where has this been the whole draft process? Just because it's probably healthy because it gets us thinking curveball, which I've been trying to do. And yet, it's like you kind of feel like, well, this is kind of how it's going to go. And then they throw all this craziness out. And it just makes you wonder, man, what is about to happen? Like, what are we about to emotionally have to go through? All right, this is what I like to have some fun. If you're a longtime Saints fan, to me, this stuff, the NFL draft history, is fun. So we don't do this a lot, but I want to, I don't know that I'll get it all in this segment, but sometimes through the show today, I want to give you my, and look, this is going to be off the wall. A lot of these are not going to be the ones that you mostly hear. Because as you've noticed, if you've listened to me over the years, I look at things a little differently than a lot of people. Now, some of these are, if you look at any list of all-time great or terrible Saints draft picks, some of these are going to be on there. But again, I look at things differently. I'm not as result-oriented as most people in the sports world in America. And yet, you have to be somewhat, I mean, result-oriented because, you know, that's the whole purpose of the draft, is to produce results. But to me, the logic, I put a lot more into the logic of and the value of what you're picking. And here's what I mean. So I'm going to give you my five worst and five best Saints draft picks. One of these is obligatory a little bit just because of who he is, even though I'm not as high on it as others. But I didn't really have another one. So, okay, let's do this. Let's start with the five best Saints draft picks ever. And I'll go from five to one. And again, this one's a little more conventional than my other one because my five worst is not going to – there might be one or two bet, you know, that what you're thinking, but I look at things differently. So mine's going to be different than what you've mostly heard in your career. I'm going to go with number five, and it's going to be, for the best, it's going to be a little different because it was in an era where they had no idea what they were doing. And it was in an era where almost every high draft pick they made was terrible. And so when they do a good one, I'm going to kind of recognize it. So I'm going to say the fifth best draft pick ever in Saint history. It was made in 1973, and it was the first of two second-round picks, and it was defensive tackle Derlin Moore from Oklahoma, who started for over a decade and had a lot of sacks and tackles, and is arguably the most underrated Saints player ever, Derlin Moore. But and again, I say that because back then the Saints had zero idea what they were doing in the draft as an organization, zero. It was terrible. The only I'm convinced, like, two years before they picked Archie Manning, I'm convinced if Archie Manning wasn't from Mississippi, like in the geographical footprint of New Orleans, like if Archie Manning was the quarterback at Oregon, they would not have taken Archie Manning. I have no idea what they would, because they were completely inept as an organization. So the Derlin Moore pick impresses me because it came in an era of them being completely clueless and inept. And so that was a good pick. This guy I'm not as high on as some right now. I'm very worried about him. But it's hard to argue with making a third-round pick a running back, and he becomes like your all-time leader in scoring and in touchdowns and all that. I mean, so it's kind of hard to argue with Alvin Kamara, 41, whatever you want to call him, not being a really good draft pick. He was a third-round pick, and he's your, like, all-time everything in scoring and you know, one of the best rushers and all of that. So, again, I'm a little worried about the direction that his career is going. I think he's dogged way too many games and plays in the last 3 years for my liking. And I'm hoping that this new regime will rekindle his, revitalize his career. But as far as a draft pick, I loved it at the time, loved it. And obviously, it's a great third pick. The obligatory pick I was talking about was William Rofe. When you draft a Hall of Famer, it's kind of hard to say that wasn't one of the best picks you've ever made. And so, I don't know. Still a little that I don't feel good about saying that, but I'll say William Rofe because they drafted a no, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say no. I'm going to take William Rofe. I don't want to do it, so I'm not going to do it. I'll change my mind. Number three, best draft pick in Saint history. I'm not going to say William Rofe just because I'm supposed to. I'm going to say it's Jim Wilkes. The Saints drafted Jim Wilkes in the 12th round in 1981. Wait, did I get the year right? Let me double check. Yes, 1981, the Saints drafted Jim Wilkes in the 12th round. Jim Wilkes started for a decade for the Saints. He played in 123 games, started 154 of them as a 12th round draft pick. So I think that's a better pick than picking a great player in William Rofe who ended up going to the Hall of Fame. I just think it's a better pick. And so I'm gonna say number three is Jim Wilkes. Number two, best Saints draft pick ever, I'm going to say, was Jari Evans. They drafted him with their second fourth-round pick in the 2006 draft, the first draft of in the Casper era. When your second fourth-round pick becomes a multi-time All-Pro, and it's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame before his life ends, hopefully. I think that's a great pick. And he was like one of the unsung heroes for the Saints' great offensive football team in that era. And then, obviously, I got to put number one, Ricky Jackson. Second pick, second-round pick in the 1981 draft, and just made the Hall of Fame. It was such a huge part of everything that was good, and then unfortunately, he left for the Cheaters, and I guess I somewhat forgave him because I'm putting him number one on this list. So, again, I don't know that this is a list that it would agree with everyone, but I think those are the picks that have a combination of great production and great value and kind of, you know, happen in a time where they really needed it.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of excluding first-round picks just because you're you.
I don't like first-round picks. Right. Well, I like them. I just love I like Wayne Martin. I almost put Wayne Martin on this list. The only reason I didn't is because of what you said. He was a first-round pick.
I think Cam Jordan would have to be in the top five. You talk about a player who the reason that they kept their competitiveness into the next decade after the original Super Bowl run, I think, is largely to do with the fact that you had an anchor at the defensive end spot. That was the 24th overall pick. He wasn't a top 10 pick.
That's true. I think you can make a really good argument. And I would put Cam Jordan on my Mount Rushmore of Saints players. And so I guess you could say, yeah, I do have an aversion in this kind of thing to first-round picks. And so that's fair. But, no, I got no problem with you saying with saying Cam Jordan should be on here. Anybody else stick out in your mind that you think is a serious overlook?
What about Drew Brees?
Well, he wasn't drafted.
I'm joking. That was a joke.
Yeah.
You didn't know that was a joke? Come on, well, Kevin. You know me now.
Now, again, these aren't necessarily my favorite. Like, I love when they drafted Muncie and Galbraith 1-2. Like, that, to me, that was the first real good draft, Muncie Galbraith.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think
there was a focus there, and they were good players, and they just
Marcus Colston in the seventh, value wise.
I think that's a good point. Maybe I ought to kick Kamara off of this too and put Colston in there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's the Kamara thing is like now he's valued way less because of what running backs are too. Like if he was picked in like 2000, I mean, he'd be the greatest player in the history of the franchise in a lot of people's minds. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I really like Marcus Colson, so you might be right on that. Maybe I ought to kick Kamara out of there and put him in there.
I mean, Colston's still basically – I mean, he doesn't have every number. Michael Thomas has him in some categories, but Colston's still got longevity over him, and he was picked four rounds later, so.
Yep. No, I think you're right on that one. All right, let's do this. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, this is the real badge of courage for Saints fans. The worst draft picks, and there's so many, and I'm going to probably have to do some honorable mentions, but my logic, again, is different than a lot of other people, and so I'll tell you why on some of these, but we'll do that next.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, and your home for the LSU Tigers.
All righty, welcome back to Footnotes. All right, y'all convinced me. Had a couple of people text said Dawson is right. I was like, okay, y'all convinced me. Y'all are right. Okay, so we'll officially go Derlin Moore, Marquise Colson, Jim Wilkes, Jahri Evans, and Ricky Jackson in reverse order. All right, the worst ones. And again, here's the point here. We can't afford to have another one of these. Like, you could argue Davenport was pretty bad. Peyton Turner was pretty bad. Like, they're up for it. Now, their careers are not – I mean, well, Davenport's done. Peyton Turner is still holding out a little hope. Still holding out a little hope on Peyton Turner. So I can't put him on this list yet. Maybe like 5 or 10 years from now, we could strongly consider him because it was bad. If when you reach, you got to hit. When you trade up, you got to hit. They traded up for Davenport, and he was a bust. They reached a little bit for, I don't think they reached like really, really, really bad. I think he was like a second round pick, but they still reached. And they miss. When you reach or you trade up, you got to hit. Now, here's the most regretful thing of the five worst draft picks that we're about to give is none of these are Mike Ditka. Like, I almost put a Mike Ditka one in just to represent the idiocy of Mike Ditka. Like, Rob Kelly, awful draft pick, although he wasn't the worst player. Jared Tomich, awful draft pick. Troy Davis, he picked Troy Davis in the third round. The cat was small and slow. That was his idea of what they needed in it as an NFL running back. In the third round, small and slow. I mean, that was just complete incompetence to draft Troy Davis in the third round. But it's a disservice to not have a Mike Ditka draft pick in the top five. And again, this top five is not going to be what a lot of you have. I think the most least talked about worst pick ever, and because there were so many bad about on these list of worst Saints pick ever, is the first one ever. Like, why don't we ever talk about the first one ever? In 1967, the Saints' first ever draft, with the 26th overall pick, in the first pick they ever made as a franchise, they picked a fullback from Alabama who never did anything. Like, how can that be your splash first pick? A fullback named Les Kelly from Alabama who never did anything. Like, I mean, they had so little idea what they were doing. They picked a fullback at 26 for their first ever pick. Awful. Of course, they traded their first ever pick, which was stupid. But that was effectively their first ever pick. All right, I don't want to say this because it's one of the popular ones. But he was such a bad football player. And the Saints had the 11th pick in 1987. And they selected Sean Knight with the 11th overall pick, which was a serious reach at the time. And I wouldn't put him on here because he's one of the more popular ones. But it's like, how can you reach and pick such a bad football player who had he had zero of an NFL career. I mean, just complete zero. All right, third is one that, like, goes back to what I originally said. When you trade up, you got to hit. In 2003, they traded valuable draft assets to trade up to the number six overall pick to draft Jonathan Sullivan, who did absolutely nothing. So I didn't really want to put him on this list, but again, it's the trade up part that makes it so bad. Because I don't know that the position was fine. It's just to trade up and miss that badly is bad. All right, so here's where I'm different. My number two worst Saints draft pick ever to me was Rick Middleton, 1974. I've told y'all this story before. They needed a linebacker. They identified that. They even identified the school, Ohio State. And they picked the wrong one. His teammate was Randy Gradishore at Ohio State. Randy Gradishore is finally about to go into the Hall of Fame. And Rick Middleton did absolutely nothing. I mean, that is just bad as it gets. But I still think this is the worst one ever. And again, it has to do with evaluation, but also what do you do it? In 1985, the Saints with the 24th overall pick selected a guy as linebacker who was a fullback to start his career at Tennessee and did absolutely nothing. Alvin Toles. They essentially picked a fullback who had moved to linebacker with the 24th pick. What were they doing? I just think that one just made zero sense to me. Like, how can your evaluation be that bad? I mean, he was awful. It's not the player. Because, look, in the first 5 or 6 years, they drafted many players that never saw the field. Alvin Toles at least played a little special teams for a while. I mean, he wasn't like the worst football player ever. But in the first round, you can't be picking fullbacks that turn into linebacker, and then somehow he's going to be like this 10-year starter for you. The logic behind the pick is what kills me. Because, like, Larry Burton was awful, but Larry Burton was a speedster. You know, they had all-star games back then. He started for the little all-star team. I've seen highlights of the game. Like, they had all these draft picks, and they played this little game, and he was like a starter, and he was making catches. Now, it turned out he had no hands, and he wasn't good, but he was, you know, he was what he was. I had no problem with them picking him. Lindsey Scott turned out to be terrible. But I didn't really have any problem picking this guy from Georgia who had had a good career in college, although probably not as productive as he should have been. I understand the logic behind the pick and what they were picking. It just didn't work out. But, man, this Alvin Toles pick is just completely awful to me. Just bad. All right. Let us head back to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water.
Hey, bro. Good morning.
Good morning.
Finally here, man.
Oh,
I'm sure
man.
You've had sleepless nights.
All these curveballs they threw at me yesterday, I just don't know what to think anymore.
And it's funny, Kevin, because I think this has been harder to figure out who they're going to take at 14 than trying to pick a player when we've picked in the late 20s in the past. There's so many variables that.
Well, I don't really think that, though, because it's tackle or tight end. Like, I don't think there are any other variables.
You say that, man. I'm telling you, Verse is still a wild card out there. He's a perfect fit in a Dennis Allen defense. In a 4-3 defense, this guy is perfect. And he's a top 10 player in the draft. So I'm not saying that's who I want him to pick, but I don't believe
there's any way they're going to go out and hire all these new offensive coaches, get a new offensive coordinator, and go through all that and then pick a defensive player in the first round. I don't believe that.
then you hadn't paid attention to the Saints in the last 30 years. That's what they do. It's somebody that we totally – I think the pick's going to be Fashanu. If you told me you got to go bet your house, who you pick, and I think it's going to be Fashanu. And I can't understand why he's actually dropping on boards. My wow pick, where you call back and say Joey is a genius, as we trade up and get Alt. And I know you hate Notre Dame guys, but he is the unquestioned top tackle in the draft. He's a left tackle, which is why I like Fashanu. So
they're both on the list. They're both on the list, though. Again, that's what adds to going back to your the comp. Notre Dame, Michigan, Penn State. That's the original list. You don't want to stay away from those. They never work, ever, for the Saints, ever.
Well, again, the guy I'm hoping and think will be there, because I don't really don't want to give up draft capital to trade up, is Fashanu. You keep talking about other teams. I think the key to the draft, and you brought up Alt all of a sudden being at number five. I mean, not Alt, but Latham being at five, is actually San Diego. Because if San Diego takes Alt, then it changes Tennessee's pick, which they could snag Fashanu at that point. And the good news is there are really five or six really good tackles available. So it just depends on how you have these guys rated. But a true left tackles, you're looking at Alton Fashanu. So I think San Diego holds the key to the Saints draft, not some of the lower ones. Well, I saw a mock yesterday where we actually trade up with Atlanta. And people say, well, that's crazy. But look, Atlanta's GM and Loomis have a great relationship. And these days of divisional trades are out the window now with free agency.
Well,
so
I don't know about that. I would not expect that to happen. But we will see. Again, it just needs to get here. It just needs to get here.
Yeah. I think our second round pick will be a wide receiver. You're going to have – you got Franklin, Leggett, Parcell, which will probably be there for sure.
Man, I don't want him. I don't want Parcell, but I don't want Parcell, but we'll see. No, but you're probably right on the wide receiver. All right, thanks, Joey. Look, but here's, again, the Chargers may very well trade back with the Vikings, like, or the Broncos, like a lot of people are thinking, and pick a tackle at that 11 or 12 spot. We'll see. All right, we'll take a timeout and be back.
Let your voice be heard. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. So speak your mind and call the hotline. 337-706-0111. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Footnotes. All right, I want to get back to this Charger thing. And it is true that Jim Harbaugh is totally strange. And so you can't be, you almost can't be surprised by anything he does. But again, this quarterback rumor is just completely ridiculous. I'm not even going to entertain that. But what I am going to entertain is, first of all, if someone trades up to with the Cardinals, presumably the Vikings or one of these quarterback teams, trades up with the Cardinals for four and picks J.J. McCarthy, which is completely silly to me. I mean, I understand we're a QW society, but you're going to trade up to get a system college quarterback at four. I mean, there's no way I could do that. But the Chargers, if they pass on Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers, whichever one they really like, at five, when you don't really have any wide receivers, I'm going to be like, what are you doing? But if they do trade down as well, would not surprise me if they traded down and then pick like Bryan Smith at 11 or 12. That would not surprise me. But also, speaking of things that I saw yesterday that I'm like, what am I looking at? I saw a mock draft yesterday that did not have Talese Fuaga, the tackle from Oregon State, in the first round at all. They didn't have him at the first round at all. And I'm like, and they had Latham at like 8 or 9. Like, what am I mean, what is going on with the last 48 hours before the draft? Like, what are they talking about?
It's like you're reading discarded movie scripts and you're going, man, that would have been insane if the movie was like that. We don't know what the actual movie is yet, so I don't, they're just mocks, they're just people's
but how could somebody make a mock in
that person might have, I mean they might have just forgot he even exists. They might not even been looking at it. I did want to, by the way, throw in worst draft picks. I obviously have a slant towards recent, you know, the last 20 years because I wasn't around for the 90s and the 80s and the 70s. Stanley Jean-Baptiste is
It was a bad one. Let's head out to the Mike's Marine Hotline, keeping you on the water.
Good morning, Kevin. The day's finally here.
Oh, it's finally here.
It's the second best football day of the year, other than the first weekend when everybody thinks they're going to the Super Bowl. Okay, Kevin, listen. Have you even mentioned James Hurst? I mean, Kevin, not only are you homeless, but you just got kicked out of
The bridge. Wait, I'm very glad you brought up James Hurst. If you've been listening, I've been saying I'm surprised that all these people I'm talking to are talking about James Hurst. Like James Hurst in my mind never fit into this plan of this new regime. He was already out of the picture in my mind. He already was out of the picture. I never thought he could fit in.
No, he's a person that has started, 50 games? The man is capable of going on the field and performing. Kevin, there's no people. There are no people. I mean, you can't tell me that James Hurst and nobody are the same person, Kevin.
I never understood why anybody thought James Hurst was going to be part of this new regime. I never did understand that.
Because he's a large human being that has played offensive line before. Without him, that's an empty spot. He's an empty person. In my opinion, I don't understand how you think nobody and James Hurst are the same thing. But you might have to pick two people, Kevin. How can you? Who? Unless there's some people in free agency, in my opinion now, you cannot take the shiny toy because you are walking down the street. You don't even have a place under the bridge. You're not only homeless, you don't even have a place under the bridge. You're walking down the street with your stuff in your hand, Kevin. I mean, you can't, like, if Brock Bowers is there, which I heard this morning, a couple people talking, one of the shows that Brock Bowers could definitely be there at 15, they say, when the coach picked. And I mean, I don't think you can take him. I think the kid, whoever the top five tackle is going to take, and I really like the other tackle from BYU, another
right
name that's difficult to pronounce.
But yeah.
I saw that scenario on one of the mocks I looked at where they took Penn State or Oregon State kid and then went with this other pick at 45, which a bunch of people have them.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
You know it.
No, but listen, Manny, call back in the next segment, in the next hour if you want. But here's the deal. We got less than a minute left. Here's the deal. Forget about Hurst. Look. If they're not happy with their tackle / offensive line situation after the draft ends, then they're going to go out and pick up a free agency that fits what they're doing. I'm telling you, Hurst was never part of their deal. I couldn't even believe how many people thought Hurst was still going to be part of their deal. They're just going to go out and pick some free agent backup lineman that fits into what they're doing. Don't even think about Hurst as part of this. I'm telling you. That he was never part of their deal. The Hurst thing was intriguing because I'm like, okay, that's what I thought. Let's move on. I don't think that makes them any more homeless than they already were at that position, in my opinion. 1 hour down, another hour to go. Stay tuned.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. This is 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with the man who speaks his own language.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 103.7. 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station. So, it's crazy. Going on right now, obviously, with everything with the draft and trying to figure out. It was a crazy night last night. The Cajuns lost to Houston Christian. That was not on anyone's radar. It was softball, barely won, and that was a game we were very concerned about. The Pels played absolutely awful last night, which happens in road games. It happens in home games some too, but the problem with that series was not last night's game. The problem with that series is you should have won game one and you didn't. And then obviously it's the NFL draft and we're going over all of this craziness that we're hearing. But to talk about some of that and more, we have an old friend, Mr. Glenn Gilbo, on with us. How are you, sir?
Hey, Kevin, good to hear from you, buddy. Hadn't talked in a while.
Well, you're right. I've been thinking about it, and then Raymond came up with the idea. I said, this is tremendous. So don't tell me you have something scheduled for this. Like, there's just nothing going on around, you know, in the world of sports this weekend.
Well, I'm going to be doing a signing with Skip on the book I did on him Saturday before the 6 p.m. Auburn LSU baseball game from 4 to 6. Right in front of the statue. And that's about the best thing about that series because both teams are really struggling this year, though LSU appears to be making a move of late. But Auburn is only Auburn's like 2-16 coming in the SEC, and LSU's 5-13. So LSU really needs a sweep to get back to breathing.
Now, do you buy the argument at all? Auburn's record is horrible, but they've played every good team and they've had the toughest schedule in conference play so far, and they're really not that awful, and they're still dangerous.
Well, I would say they're still dangerous if you're a 5-13 team. Yeah, because you know that's the argument for LSU too. They've played the best teams, but you know they played the best teams last year and won the games. So I don't buy that. I mean, their schedule does lighten up according to records, you know, from now on. And last week, Missouri only had a few wins. LSU has a chance to get to 13-17 and 14-16. And teams with those records have made the NCAA tournament.
So what's your best guess right now? Do you think that's going to happen?
I think they if they can sweep this weekend, they'll be 8-13. And then if they can just win the rest of the series, is you know they'll have a chance to get into that 14-16 zone, and then win a game or two in the tournament. In fact, you've had teams make the NCAA tournament from the SEC who didn't even make the SEC tournament. So they're going to have a chance if they can get close to 500 as the regular season ends.
All right. The other thing going on this weekend, obviously, is the NFL draft. And I know you're doing mostly college, but you've been around the Saints organization, the NFL draft for most of your life. So have you ever figured out why we continue to play this smokescreen game when most of us know in our hearts that most of it is smokescreen? Most of these NFL teams put out smokescreens for reasons to trick other NFL teams who also put out smoke screens for the same reasons, and yet somehow they think they're still going to trick them. Like, have you ever figured all that out?
It's a lot of smoke. from both ends, yeah. You know, I used to go to Mickey Loomis's pre-draft press conference every year. It was, you know, it's always like the Wednesday before, and I didn't go this year. because, you know, he does the same thing every year, and it's just not very informative. And to be honest, you know, my outkick editors just aren't as interested in the Saints as they used to be for obvious reasons. You know, I think, and Hazlitt did a lot of the same thing. You know, it's kind of silly. Really, the worst thing is what the agents do, you know, when they try to put out information to hurt other players so their client will get picked up. But, you know, I don't know what it is. It's like sometimes when they outthink themselves with the draft, you know, it's obvious the Saints have a lot of needs, but since it is a good offensive tackle draft, they got to pick a left tackle. And if they don't, you know, they're being contrarian. And I think what happens too, Kevin, is the draft is too late. It ought to be in March. And people outthink themselves,
yes.
You know, and they trade for Tim Tebow and J.J. McCarthy starts getting ranked high and they start saying, oh, maybe Jaden isn't the number two pick. You know, it's too much time to let people think. Or Johnny, you know, I never forget Mike Mayock said Johnny Manziel was going to be the star of the draft. Dallas was going to trade up to get him. They just got too much time and they got too much air to fill. That's the problem.
It is just crazy. All right, so speaking of Malik Nabers, it is an incredible, like, again, it, you know, around here, he was a big news item because he was at Como, and then he wanted to go to Southside, and they ruled him ineligible, so he didn't even play his senior year, and then he was going to be going to Mississippi State, and somehow that didn't happen at the last minute. He ended up signing at LSU, and now the cat might be like the fifth pick in the first round of the draft, and he had just this incredible year last year. I mean, it's unbelievable, his rise.
Yeah, and he was pretty consistent at LSU. It's not like he just had one year. You know, he was pretty good for a while, I always thought. So, you know, now, I mean, what's the other receiver's name? Brian Johnson from LSU? Is
Thomas.
That the other receiver's name?
Thomas.
I'm sorry, Brian Thomas, exactly. I think those two guys are legitimate top 10 or 15 first-round picks. But, you know, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a grade above those guys, but not much, you know. But I think Malik Nabers would be a great pick, you know, for a lot of teams. You know, LSU just keeps putting out those wide receivers, man. So yeah, I mean, it is amazing. I remember when LSU got him. You know, I thought, I mean, I had no idea that he'd be a first rounder. You know, I thought he was going to be a good receiver at LSU, maybe a second or third round pick, but he really shined in his career.
All right, getting bigger picture while I've got you, on there's so many things about college athletics that are, to me and opinion of a lot of people, are heading in the right direction. But you mentioned being fair to players earlier with these agents and what they do. Let me ask you this: what's worse? In the 80s, we talked about all these renegade, we called them renegade programs, that recruited with suitcases. You remember that? You know, the SMUs and A&Ms and all of that. And it was supposedly the Wild Wild West, you know, in the old Southwest Conference. And what's worse? A recruiter who gives a bunch of money to a family who needs it to get them to go to their school, like SMU and all them were doing. And, you know, who knows, however many, a lot of people were doing suitcase recruiting. Or now what they do is they tell these kids, come to my school and we'll give you $1 million. And then they get $200,000. They lie, cheat, and steal to get them away. And then they don't even get the money. To me, that's even worse.
From collectives. Some of these collectives have gone bankrupt, and they make promises they can't keep. I mean, in many ways, it's really no better.
It's worse. Don't you think it's worse?
And the way I see it, from a financial standpoint, I think they're wasting more. Even though it's legal now, because of NIL, according to the NCAA, they're wasting a lot of money because in the old days, only the good players got paid. Now they're paying the bad players. You know, the collectives pay everyone.
Yeah,
it's and, you know, and they're paying the guys before they get here. And you know this, half of every signing class doesn't pan out. So those guys are getting money. You know, so if you had NIL when Jordan Jefferson was playing, he'd have got paid. The worst quarterback that LSU ever had for starting for more than a year would have got paid. You know, so at least in the old days when it was illegal, just the good guys got paid, and they tended to get paid according to their accomplishment. You know, not these collectives just give money to everybody. And I think it's a waste of money, and I think those people ought to be spending the money on better things. But
well, they're actually paying them now. They're actually paying them now just to visit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. That was one of the things that put your good buddy Nick Saban over the edge. In November, he was trying to get some kid to come visit, and the kid asked for $1 million just to visit. No. I mean, are you kidding me? It's ridiculous. And plus, you know, he had a guy ask him if he could get his girlfriend into law school at LSU, at Alabama, and you know, it's just ridiculous what people are asking for now.
Absolutely. All right, so we'll see what happens with LSU and Auburn over the weekend, but you're going to be out there signing books. And is Skip going to be with you, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it's going to be Skip. Yeah, Skip and I will be at the statue, which, you know, you don't have to get a ticket to come to the statue. It's right before the entrance. And you can bring a book you've already had to get signed by Skip, and we'll be selling books there as well. And, yeah, I've done some signings by myself, and they're not nearly as crowded as when the rock stars.
I can imagine. All right, well, we won't talk about Astros because it's too depressing right now. Hopefully they can actually win a game.
Hey, they're better than the White Sox, man.
Oh, man. Maybe the White Sox, we can trade Bregman there and he can give us some first-round draft picks or something. I don't know. It's just pitiful. All right, well, it's good talking to you again. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, thank you.
Take care. We'll take a timeout and be back.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana's sports station on YouTube.
Welcome back. You are listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. All right. Again, you can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 706-0111, 706-0111, brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. What is the results of our poll question of the day, sir?
Yeah, we're asking you for your final guesses. We've done a little, you know, a couple variations of this poll, but this is the one that's going to matter the most. What position will the Saints draft tonight? 81% going with offensive line, 15% say wide receiver or tight end, 4% say other, and no votes for D-line.
I get Joey's point that they love to throw us curveballs, but I don't – have they really thrown us curveballs on the side of the ball that they're going on? I don't think we were – Like last year, we thought they would draft a defensive lineman, and they drafted a tackle, and he worked out okay. When they drafted Davenport, it wasn't the position, I think, that we were all freaked out about. Is just, you know, he was a little bit of a project. I mean, the guy started his career as a wide receiver at Texas San Antonio. I mean, I don't know that they've thrown his sides of the ball curveballs as much as the actual player. I just will be shocked if they don't pick an offensive player. I guess, you know, if I don't think it's going to happen, but say, you know, one of the top three wide receivers, I don't think there's any chance it's really going to happen, other than maybe Adunze could drop. I guess they could pick a wide receiver there. Obviously, we, you know, Brock Bowers at tight end is the wild card. you know, starting in like pick five, he's a wild card. Like anybody could pick him at any moment, and none of us should be surprised. Starting at about pick five, and going all the way, like someone said earlier, like to pick 15. I think Manny said it's in pick 15 or 16. He could go in. He could go five. It wouldn't surprise me. He could go 15 or 16. It wouldn't surprise me. I'd be surprised if he went much further than that because he's such a, you know, potential on paper total game changer for your offense, kind of like, you know, the Kittles and Kelsey's and such. So, oh man, but no, anybody. I just can't see more defensive line. Look, there's a couple very good on paper edge rushers from UCLA and Alabama that if they went in the top 10 to 12 will not surprise me. I just don't want the Saints to pick. They just cannot go that route. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. Hello.
Hello, Kevin.
Yes, sir.
Did you have a good time with your favorite Astro last night?
I did not go to the game, and so I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not.
I was just wondering what the fat man said.
No, I did not get it. I did not talk to him.
Okay. Also, you're getting you had a commercial just a few minutes ago, a few seconds ago, and Jerry Rice was on it. Oh. What is wrong with you?
Look, I have nothing to do with it. Every time I hear it, I just my stomach gets queasy, and I just want to throw up. They just love to get that dig into me, and I don't know why they want to be mean to me, but I'm with you. I think about that every time they play. It's just absolutely nauseating.
Yeah, they need to quit doing that to you.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Take care. Look, if the whole Berkman thing is so strange for me, you know, it's like, if you ask me to name my favorite Astro players of all time, number one is Cesar Cedeño. Number two would be Lance Berkman. Just killed me when he got fat late in his career, out of shape, and then went to the Cardinals. It's like Ricky Jackson wasn't one of my favorite players, but I really loved him. And then he went to the Cheaters. It's why I learned at an early age, I'm talking middle school age, You just can't, it can't be about players. I just can't live that life. I learned that back in like, it was probably Wes, all about that same 2-year period. I loved Muncy. I loved Wes Chandler. And when they got rid of him, and about that same time, Cedeño left the Astros. Early 80s, 81 or so, and he went like play for like the Cardinals and the Reds. And I'm like, what? And I was, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years old. And I'm like, I cannot do this player stuff anymore. Like, it's about my team. Like, I can't get attached to Cedeño or because they may not even be there anymore. Like, they just leave. And so, again, I stopped being a player person just way back then. But I did like Berkman, and then he went to the Cardinals. Ugh. So, although he's one of my, I would say he's probably my second favorite when he was playing favorite Astro ever, I don't even think I'd want to talk to him after that. I just move on. Anyway, all right. By the way, speaking of that era that I was just talking about, one of the draft picks that I've had some people text me say, how in the world could you not mention Russell Erksleben? I get why people say Russell Erksleben was arguably the worst draft pick in Saint history. And I did not like it. I agree. It was bad. Turned out to be awful for a lot of reasons. One, we don't know how good obviously, there were some flaws in his character that they didn't do a good job of doing their homework on, for one. But I think you have to understand the era that was 2 to 3, maybe 4 years away. The kickers back then were still terrible. Like, they were terrible. Like, that was an era where a lot of people were still kicking head on. They weren't even soccer stuff. I mean, some were, but there were still a lot of kickers kicking head on. There weren't a lot of kickers. Like, making 50-yard field goals was this unique thing back then. There weren't that many guys making 50-yard field goals. You know, you still had, like, you know, Mark Mosey, who was better of the super, certainly upper echelon of that kicking style. And, you know, you had a lot of bad kickers still. Fred Cox and all of that stuff was still going on back then. And so you hadn't gotten into this era that we're in now where kickers are making almost all of their kicks and it should be easy, like the opinion I have back there. Back then, it wasn't like that. And so Erksleben at Texas and right after that Cox at Arkansas, they were kicking these 55-yarders and 59-yarders or whatever in college. And so the Saints were a pretty good running team. They had a pretty good year. They could, the 2 years before that, they were throwing the ball. They were about to, they were making some progress because they had been so bad on defense. And so they thought they were getting this guy that could help their offense by making all these 50 and 60 yarders, which no one else had. Plus, he could be a punter. So, like, you were getting a 2-for-1. Look, it was a disaster. He actually was an okay punter. He was a terrible kicker. Turned out the real reason they got him was for the kicking, and he turned out to be terrible. But I could at least understand it's not as bad as it sounds what they were doing. But no, it was a complete disaster. No question there. All right, let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline, keeping you on the water.
Foot.
Yes, sir.
All right, now, Foot. I think you're taking this too far.
What's that?
A commercial.
What are you talking about?
And it cringes you. The Jerry Rice commercial, really.
Well, I have nothing to do with that. But no, I hate that commercial. I hate it every time I hear it. I'm like, why are they doing this to me?
It's a commercial.
It doesn't matter. I hate hearing his voice. I hate seeing his face.
It's a commercial.
No, I hate seeing his face, and I hate hearing his voice. Yes.
Man, that's a whole nother level.
Yes.
Man, you really serious about this?
When I have over the years, I've done a lot of contests on my show. 16 and 80 are never eligible, ever.
What? Thank God, Ronnie's birthday this year. He feel like you. He's not a 49 anymore. He made 50. But check it. I understand that, but I listened about this. For a while about this, for the draft tomorrow or today, about this tight end. I'm not okay with drafting that guy before offensive lineman. I'm not. I think we have too many other important positions, especially starting at the offensive line. We need to take care before a tight end. I mean, teams won without great tight ends or this type of tight end. Who says he's going to be a bust or not be a bust? Maybe he's good but not work in our system, but work good in somebody else's system. I mean, when we saw Jimmy Graham and others, I mean, Jimmy Graham can hold it down at least 1 year until the next year. I mean, there's only one good tight end in the whole draft, right? So, I mean, we can get a tight end next year.
Exactly. And, again, he's a guy who I think this guy is like George Kittle. I mean, And again, you got to think about who the new OC is and how tight ends have always been a bigger part of of what he was doing.
I mean, he's special. Sanders, I can't tell.
Do what?
I'm glad he getting his Heisman Trophy situation back. Thank you. But I'm just saying we can compare players to anybody, but we don't know how they're going to turn out.
Well, no, we don't know how anybody's going to turn out. I mean, of late, again, forever, the Saints knew what a good offensive lineman – I don't know if they know what a good offensive lineman looks like anymore. They ain't done too good the last few they've taken.
I agree. But, Foot, we need to protect the quarterback. Right. As well as get an offensive lineman to open holes for the run game.
No, again, I mean, I have no problem with picking tackles. Zero problem with picking tackles. Zero.
Okay.
We're homeless.
Foot, I'm going to leave you with something else. And I'm going to ask you this question.
Yes.
You can answer when I hang up. When you compare two coaches, you got Dicker and Allen. I understand what you said about Dicker.
Oh.
But how many playoffs he made and Allen, and how many Super Bowls the other one have or not. I'll leave you with that.
All right. If anybody who has the opinion that Mike Ditka is a better coach than Dennis Allen, then I'm sorry. We can't even have that conversation. I mean, Mike Ditka is the biggest buffoon I've ever seen coach for the Saints. All right. So one more thing. I keep hearing the Saints have so many other needs. I don't agree with that. Like, I way too many people say that. Like, they have an overwhelming need at offensive line. No question. It's not arguable. I don't think they have all these needs at cornerback. I think they have a need at safety. I don't think they have this big need at linebacker. I don't think they have this big need at running back. I don't think they have this big need at, I mean, even at tight end, I don't think they have this huge need at tight end, but I think this guy's just a cut above. But I don't think they have this big need in most positions. I don't think they have this big need at wide receiver. I buy the economic value of getting a receiver. I think so many people think they're replacing Michael Thomas, and I don't know if any of these guys are going to be a Michael Thomas guy. I think the biggest Michael Thomas guy is the tight end. So I believe they have a huge, overwhelming need at offensive linemen. But decide, the Saints have all – they act like the Saints are the Patriots. I just don't buy it. I don't believe it. We'll take a timeout. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You are listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette, 1041 Lake Charles. You can give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. All right, so I'm trying to envision what it's going to be like tomorrow morning when we get here. Again, it could, if they throw us a total curveball, I will be completely bewildered and shocked. I really don't think that's going to happen. If it's anything besides offensive tackle or tight end, then I'm going to be pretty surprised. I guess we need to open our mind to the possibility that, like, they love Brian Thomas. I mean, that's the only other one I could see. I don't think that's going to happen. But, if it happened, I would shake my head. Oh, okay. I mean, I wouldn't be totally surprised by it. After everything I've heard and read, what I'm really starting to think, especially if there's anything to this J.C. Latham's thing, this recent J.C. Latham thing, rise to the top, is that somehow, and it's kind of what we've been talking about, somehow the three tackles are going to go ahead of them, and it's not going to be the three that they have ranked 1, 2, and 3. And so they're going to supposedly get, like, their third best tackle on their board, and it's going to work out. Again, I know most of you don't buy the old list thing. Dawson certainly doesn't. But I'm just telling you, been doing this Saints draft stuff for a long time. Michigan, Notre Dame, Penn State never work. Never. And so it's a little scary. Look, I understand what Joe Alt is, and I don't think Joe Alt's going to be there. But look, would I be totally shocked if Joe Alt for some reason slips, which I don't think is going to happen. But if he slipped, if Joe Alt gets to 8 or 9 and the Saints are totally sold that this guy's by far the biggest lock of all the tackles that they trade up and get him, no, that would not totally shock me. I don't want it to happen, but that would not totally shock me. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Alt's going to be gone. Alt may be picked 5 by the Chargers. Many people are projecting that. Many. people are projecting that. But the other thing, like, Glenn brought up that Mickey Loomis lies. And, of course, he lies. He's an NFL executive, and he's behind a mic. They lie almost every time a coach or an NFL executive gets behind a mic publicly. They lie. Understand that. I mean, there's some form of a lie that's taking place. There has to be. It's just the way it is. But he said on Tuesday, I don't want to read too much into it, but maybe we shouldn't read nothing into it. He said Trevor Penning is still a tackle, right? He said that. In their mind, he's a tackle, not a guard. In my mind, I don't know why I don't just move him to left guard. But he said in their mind, he's still a tackle. So could he be their right tackle? If he's still, in their plan, a left tackle, then could they be open to drafting a right tackle when all of us are thinking this pick at 14, all this tackle talk is all about picking a left tackle? Is it even possible that they're thinking that? That some combination of a free agent they haven't picked up, one they've already picked up, and Penning they think can be one of a left tackle. Or Andres Pete, for that matter. So, again, it would be a lot more clear in my mind if they said Penning is a guard and we got to pick two tackles. You would be more needy at tackle, but it would all make more sense. Cause like, Penning can make he was so bad last year. The Saints didn't win the division for one reason. Trevor Penning was terrible. Again, they missed on a first round pick at a need position. They botched it. And that's why they didn't win the division last year, because he was terrible. It ruined the whole first month of the season. It delayed the progress of the offense immensely. They had no running game. They couldn't protect. They couldn't use their tight ends. It was just a devastating blow to the offense. So now they're telling me he's still in their tackle plans. So are they drafting this cat from Penn State to be a right tackle, or is he just going to move at left tackle? And if he does, then who's going to play right tackle? Is Penning going to be the right tackle? I don't know. They're just, again, the point of all of this is I've said it from the very beginning of the process, right after the Super Bowl. We have no – well, after they made their hires – we have no idea what this group thinks of the offensive linemen that they have. We really don't. We're assuming, and a lot of our assumptions may prove out to be accurate. But we really have no idea. And, I mean, have you really wrapped your mind around the statement, if it's true, we still think, look at Trevor Penning as a tackle? What does that mean going forward? Like, is it even in their mindset that guy could be the starting left tackle? And if it is, maybe we shouldn't have got off this Latham thing. That, like, early on, everybody was picking him. And we were like, well, we need a left tackle because the left tackle was a disaster last year. And so we all kind of, most of us got off of Latham, and then he kind of started dropping, and now he's rising. I'm like, well, maybe they like him. Oh, man, it's just time for this to end. And again, who trades down and what, if they trade down between 11 and 12 and 13, if they trade down and pick a tackle, like, I don't think If the Cardinals trade down, I don't think they're picking a tackle at 11, 12, or 13. If the Patriots trade down, I don't think they're trading that far down. I think they're picking me. But if they do, I don't think they're picking a tackle at 11, 12, or 13. But I think if the Chargers trade down, they could pick a tackle at 11, 12, or 13. I think if the Bears trade down, they could pick a tackle at 11, 12, or 13. And so it may not go as high as we think, but it might still go before the Saints pick. By the way, do we know when is the first pick going to be made tonight? Have they announced that, or we still don't really know that?
I don't know. Not when it says the draft starts. I know that.
They always do a bunch of foolishness for 20 or 25 minutes. Seems like it. Because we've been waiting for months, and then it's there, and we're sitting there, and they're talking about foolishness. Talking about practice. Talking about fashion. Talking about music. It's not time for all that. It's time for the draft. And they just do silliness. So my nerves are going to be bad in that 25-minute period, I think. Or until they actually, we just got to get to pick number four. Everyone is saying pick number three, but I really expect the Patriots to pick a quarterback. We just got to get to pick number four so the draft can really start. We'll take a timeout and be back.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. Your home for the Houston Astros.
Welcome back to Footnotes. You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles. Boy, it's a good thing the Astros played this afternoon. This is what I need. I need the Astros to finally win a game. They haven't won one in seemingly forever in the afternoon. That will put me in a good mindset. And we still got a little bit of a UL football presser. I need to go to that. That will take my mind off of it for a little while. And then I think the answer is about 7:25. I don't know that's the answer, but I think the answer to the question, like, when is the first pick actually going to be made? I'm thinking about 7:25. It's a guess because I don't know. You never know what tomfoolery they're going to come up with, but I think that's when it's going to happen. It's about 7:25. So. The good thing is, you know, when the Saints were picking in the 20s and it gets kind of late and you get tired, unless they trade back, which the Saints never trade back, so we know that's not happening. It's actually going to be an earlier draft night than normal, other than for me, you know, I'll probably stay up for the bitter end because – it's not my number one priority, obviously, but I still kind of think that the Broncos are going to be – I don't expect them to pick a quarterback at 12. They may because they need one. They need a quarterback. I get that. But I don't really think they're going to pick one at 12. But I don't know. Some keeps telling me they're going to be in position to try to trade back in late in the first round. And if the quarterback, whether it's Nix or Penix, drops – that I could see them as one of the teams to trade back in and try to get one. But we'll see. It's kind of funny that, like the Lions, when I did the original, I had no idea who the Lions were going to pick. And then, you know, they come out and say earlier this week for their little pre-draft pressers that they have one player, almost probably a little too honest, they have one player that they like, and if he's not there, they're trading back. They're telling you now. We're going to trade back. We're going to trade out of the first round. Okay. I mean, I don't have any problem with it other than the fifth-year thing. But they're kind of telling you, we're going to trade back. And so, you know, the team that – there's so many situations that are interesting, but the team that I'm going to be kind of the most anxious late – it has nothing to do with the Saints and nothing to do with the Broncos, is what the Bills do. Because they have a serious need on defense with some of the players they lost. And I don't think it's as big a need as some people think at wide receiver, but it's a need. And there are a lot of good wide receivers. And so I'm anxious to see what they do. By the way, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and he was reading something that went back over the last 20 years, and the biggest, highest percentage of draft bust in the last two decades in the first round positionally, which is not a surprise because I've preached this for years, is wide receivers and tight ends. And I think, and so at my core, I've always been against picking wide receivers and tight ends. But I'm having to give in because, one, the college game has infiltrated the NFL game more than I thought it would in the last 3 or 4 years, and you have to recognize that, and it's probably a great thing for the NFL. And the whole idea of how much money receivers are making, like the Lions just shelled out well over $100 million yesterday for their number one receiver. The whole financial aspect of drafting a quarterback or a receiver helps you, if you hit on them, save you money down the road at that position, because signing a free agent in that position, if you have a hole, costs a lot of money. And so I get that financial part of it. But again, the problem and the thing that makes it so complicated is what we said earlier. Normally, I wouldn't even want to think about this tight end thing. Like, I have friends that are like, what in the world are you talking about? We can't afford a tight end. And look, I've been saying, using the analogy, that the Saints are homeless. I get it. But I also am losing faith that they know what an offensive lineman is. Now, this new, or and a defensive lineman for that matter, this new regime, you got to just trust that they know what they want. We don't know what they want. We don't know what they think of the guys they already have, like I've been trying to remind myself and y'all all this time. But they know what they want, and we got to trust that they can make the right pick. And look, again, I can handle boring tomorrow morning. What would be the most boring first-round pick? Fuaga, maybe? Probably Fuaga. If they pick him, no one's going to be all excited, but you get it, okay? You get it. Any of the linemen, you know, like now, somehow, and I don't think it's going to happen, somehow they pick Alt because some people have him as like, you know, a can't miss, then you'd probably be a little more excited that you got supposedly the number one guy. I'm glad that they're so high on it because there's just something about picking the fourth or fifth best player at a position when you're drafting in the upper half of the first round that I struggle with. But again, when you're homeless, you can't worry about that kind of stuff. I don't like that's another the reason why I would love to pick the tight end. There's part of me that would love to pick the tight end because you'd be picking a premier player at a position that could really impact your team, no question, instead of picking the fourth or fifth best player at a position. When, again, if you're drafting 25, that's okay, but when you're drafting in the upper half of the first round, you kind of want to get a premier player at a premier position. And I know tight end's not a premier position, but I think the way he plays tight end can make it a premier position. And again, if you go back and look at this, so like the cheaters and the Chiefs, look at the impact that tight end has on those teams. So I understand if you think tight end, picking a tight end is completely preposterous. That opinion makes sense to me, and I get it. But the part of accepting the new way that the league is played is that tight ends can have a way bigger impact than, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. No question. Oh, man, I just need tomorrow not to be depressing. Please, not depressing. We'll see what happens. Have a nice day.